You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Why Torture is Wrong and the People Who Love Them is the title of Christopher Durang's latest dark comedy, which is receiving its world premiere at the Public Theater. In his review in the New York Times, Ben Brantley notes that, I'm quoting, "You might think no sensible theatergoer would want to attend a play in which a young man is tied to a chair to be beaten bloody and a leading character points a rifle at the audience, musing on spraying it with bullets. And yet," he writes, "Mr. Durang turns such scenes into occasions for angry and indignant laughter." The cast includes Laura Bernanti, Christine Nielsen, Ari Arison, and Richard Poe, and Nicholas Martin directed. It's on a limited run now through May 3rd. It's been extended from April 26th to May 3rd. So if you hope to see it, you'd probably best book your seat soon. It gives me great pleasure now to welcome Christopher Durang back to our show. Hi.
Hello. Hi.
I want to read the full quote from Brantley. He says, "It turns such scenes into occasions for one of the most releasing forms of laughter, the kind that encourages the spewing of the anger, fear, and helpless indignation that build up in anyone who still reads or watches serious world news." So did watching the news about Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo get you laughing?
No, certainly not. I wrote the play trying to...
If those headphones are bothering you, take them off.
Oh, good. Thank you. They are bothering me. The red state, blue state stuff. So I did not start trying to write about torture. I also write very intuitively, so I didn't know I was going to end up being about torture. But just the incredible differences of opinion in the country between Republican and Democrat. And so I wanted to write about that. But I didn't want to tie it specifically to the Bush-Cheney years. They're not even mentioned by name. It is true the war in Iraq is briefly mentioned.
And the war on terror.
And definitely the war on terror.
And John Yoo is mentioned
by
name.
Yes, many times. And by the way, before he just got so prominent in the news again. I mean, I was obsessed with him when he was first in the news several years ago with his so-called legal opinion, basically redefining torture. And I just thought it was such a misuse of legal stuff. I mean, you can't look at the Constitution and basically decide that the president is dictator.
So you were writing for the Huffington Post. Is this something that you were writing about at the same time you were working on the play?
Yes, I have written it for the Huffington Post, and I don't know that I've actually literally written about torture. I can't remember. The other thing is, do you know what? Brantley uses the word angry, and I feel some of my plays are angry. Oddly, I don't think this play comes off as angry. You saw it. Tell me if you thought it did.
I didn't think it was angry.
I think it is a kind of strange release. I've had some people say, wow, it's like all the upset we felt in the 8 years, we get to release it in laughter. And I also end up, which either is or isn't controversial, I don't know, with a kind of fantasy sequence where the leading actress stops the play and makes it end in a more hopeful fashion. Although, just because I didn't want to send everybody home grouchy.
Oh, we really can't go back to 1960 or so, or before 9/11, and make everything better. But if it was really angry, you probably would have set this play in a prison. Instead, it takes place in a cheap hotel room, various rooms of a suburban New Jersey home, and a local bar. In the end, this is like so many of your plays about domestic politics, isn't it? And it's about your favorite kinds of people, head cases.
Head cases, yes. Well, the mother in particular is quite a head case. It is a domestic comedy, and it is true that the father is very much he's very conservative, very right wing, and the daughter, we learn, is fairly liberal because he's always blaming the losing the Vietnam War on her, even though she wasn't born then.
Her and Jane Fonda,
and definitely on Jane Fonda, who it's interesting. She's in town now on Broadway because my character is obsessed with her, the father, I mean.
And not alone, you know. She's been on the show a couple of times, and both times we've received angry
right.
email from people who said, how can you put that traitor on the your show? I always thought that there was a statute of limitations on visiting North Vietnam, now just called
Vietnam.
Well,
actually, one of the things that was so awful about the Kerry campaign was, the presidential campaign, not him, but I thought we were done with Vietnam. And the amount of anger that was still out there about not winning in Vietnam, and also the idea that it was a good idea we were fighting in there, which I thought had sort of fallen off the radar as something to think, it's just shocking.
And the father here, who I think is unfortunately named Leonard, is still ranting and raving about losing Vietnam.
Right. Yes, he is. Yeah.
So now your star is Laura Benanti. People will remember her for her Tony Award winning performance in Gypsy.
Right, right.
Which was an incredible performance.
It was wonderful.
Did you want her for this role, or was this just one of those lucky casting
things? It's one of those lucky casting things. I had not thought of her, when the idea came up, it seemed a really good one. I mean, one of the things that was so exciting about that wonderful production of Gypsy is the acting of the three leads, all three of them, Patti LuPone and Boyd Gaines too, were just so rich and textured, and they're all great singers too. And so I thought they were all just astonishing in the show, and that Laura. Was definitely the best Gypsy I'd ever seen. I mean, because she was so moving as the young girl and so convincing as the stripper, actually. Anyway, Laura's a delight to work with, and it's fun to see her do a play that is a play and not a musical.
You don't have a personal relationship with her?
No. I'm starting to now. I mean, it's a friendship anyway, but no, I didn't know her before. Mm-hmm. No.
She's Stephen Pasquale's play.
Yes, indeed. And he's in the Neil LaBute play right now.
I mentioned all the settings. That is made possible by David Corin's ingenious revolving set. Was that something that was also in the script?
No, it was not set that it be on a turntable. That was the solution that David Corin's and the director Nicky Martin came up with.
And the turntable actually becomes part of the play.
Well, at a certain point, it was written that they go to this idealized Hooters at the end, and I had said to David that I thought that it should be the wide stage. We should suddenly go wide. But David and Nicky together came up with a turntable, and what's exciting about it is that there's a certain point when Laura's character stops the play and decides she has to go back in time, where she walks through the set as it revolves, and that was actually the director's idea, and it's a very visually exciting and pleasing one.
Well, since you mentioned Hooters, maybe we should do the plot. It's quite complicated. We don't even want to reveal some of it.
That's
because.
Right.
But maybe we can do a bit of the setup. Do you want to do it?
Sure. Laura's character named Felicity wakes up in a motel, and she looks around, doesn't recognize where she is or how she got there, and then she sees there's a man in bed next to her, doesn't recognize him, and just figures, oh, God, did I get drunk last night, and I'm going to – she's, by the way, a normally well-behaved young lady, but somehow she
despite
got –
despite her dysfunctional family.
Yes. So anyway, she's tiptoeing out, and the man wakes up in bed and says, hey, how'd you sleep? And they have an uncomfortable discussion. She just doesn't remember meeting him. So she's about to leave when he says, why are you leaving? We got married last night, and she's just horrified. And
they'd met at a Hooters.
Yes, and I'm sorry, they met. She finds that out because she says, is there any paperwork on this marriage? And he hands her a menu, and she says, well, this is a menu. And he says, oh, the marriage certificate's inside. And then she says, did we get married at Hooters? And then he says, no, but through Hooters, we met this minister who does porno on the side, and he married us. So everything that this young man says gets worse and worse. And then he seems to be a little dangerous and to have a bad temper, and his name is Zamir, even though he claims that's Irish.
He makes pronouncements like, it's a flaw in my character, but all the women in my family are dead.
Right, which he then takes back and says, well, they're not actually dead, but they can tell you I have a terrible temper. So he's somebody who says very scary things and then pulls back to some degree.
And he says scary things after she has the reaction we all would have had. Why not just get this marriage annulled?
Right, right, right. And he gets furious with that and takes it as a attack on his ego, and he also wants to meet her parents, who he hopes will support them.
Now, he is weird.
Excuse me.
He is weird, but so are her parents. Felicity's father, as we pointed out, is a right-wing bigot. Her mother is incapable of conducting a linear conversation. And that's part of the fun.
Right.
Also, and a major part of the fun is how you take shots at the current state of Broadway theater. Now, I mean, here's this play that we would think is about terrorism and all those other things. And I would say about almost half of it is about this discussion of theater. Felicity says she has no use for the current state of Broadway theater, which has become very expensive and very Anglo-Irish. And you get a lot of laughs from this audience, which has obviously seen most of the plays you're making fun of.
Right. That's true. I would say it's maybe a third of the play, not a half. But
okay. Well, and the mother keeps on coming back to it.
True. Part of the mother's character after a while is that she copes with life by immersing herself in theater. And it's not only Broadway, by the way, just theater in general.
You talk about all the plays. You suggest only plays that are being produced nowadays are by Martin McDonagh, David Hare, Tom Stoppard, Alan Ayckbourn, Michael Frayn. you are making a point there.
Sure.
And the Times pointed out that you've had a long hate affair with Broadway because even though you've been a Pulitzer finalist, won quite a few OBs, the sum total of the performances of the three shows you've had produced on Broadway are no more than 100.
Right. Well, I have not had any shows that ran on Broadway. That is correct. They had previews and didn't last that long. One was a limited run anyway, Sex and Longing, but the other two didn't run particularly. But that is not why. Well, first of all, it's my character speaking. I don't personally not want to ever see an English or Irish playwright on the stage. I think they're all very talented. I do sometimes go to the theater, as I think many other writers, such as A.R. Gurney, I know feels this way, and feel there are some plays that would not be on Broadway if they were written by an American author, that there's just something about the cachet of British approval or Irish approval. And again, what you're quoting as me is arguably me, but it's also my character speaking. The mother says to Laura Benanti's character, Laura doesn't even want to talk about theater. She says, "What have you seen lately?" And Laura, out of frustration, says, "Well, I've seen 100 plays by Martin McDonagh. I've seen 200 plays by Tom Stoppard. I've seen 300 plays by Michael Frayn. And I forget the other two authors, I say.
Alan Ayckbourn,
right.
I think that David Hare.
And David Hare, right. And by the way, there are many plays of David Hare's, for instance, that I think are great. I adored plenty. I like many of his works. But, you know, I will admit, as an American author, I feel that we undervalue the American writers and overvalue the British ones. So I agree.
And there's even some humor about people committing suicide during Coast of Utopia. another killed herself during a performance of Faith Healer, much to the annoyance of Ray Fiennes.
That's correct.
Now, on your when one enters your official website, the user is instructed to click Liv Ullmann having a nervous breakdown. And I was wondering if, even though Ingmar Bergman is not one of the funnier people that ever lived, if he's one of your influences, because so much of your writing is about dysfunctional families, about dysfunctional education, the sorts of things he liked to make films about.
Well, actually, when I was in college long, long ago, I loved the movies of Fellini and Bergman both, probably Fellini a little more because he was so playful. But I also did think many of the films of Ingmar Bergman were terrific. And that picture of Liv Ullmann having a breakdown, it's just funny. She's in like a hospital gown screaming and with a signature on it. And it was given to me once as a opening night gift by the playwright Paul Rudnick. And I always found it a very funny photo. So I just put it on my website as a means of entering. I discover, because I teach part-time at Juilliard, that even though Liv Ullmann is a great actress, many of my students don't know who she is anymore.
Oh, that's sad.
Yeah, it's odd who remains famous and who doesn't.
Because I was wondering if Christine Nielsen is your Liv Ullmann, because she's appeared. Liv Ullmann was in so many Bergman films, and
right.
Christine Nielsen has been in a fair number of your plays.
She has indeed. The first one was Betty's Summer Vacation that she won an OB for. And then one that was done outside the city, Mrs. Bob Cratchit's Wild Christmas Bin. She played the lead part. And then Miss Witherspoon, and now this. So that's four plays of mine. She's been in and in rather quick succession. Yes, she's a wonderful and a very... in this play, she reminds me a little bit of Billie Burke, the 30s actress. I mean, the character is that way a little bit, very scattered.
Do you write with her voice and acting in mind?
You know, I both do and I don't, because sometimes you don't know who's going to be available and who isn't. I did write Act Two of Betty's Summer Vacation with her in mind, because I'd run into her at a party, and I was going to have a reading of this play that I hadn't yet finished. And I thought she was too young to play the mother, but when I saw her and she expressed interest, I thought, you know, it's not a realistic play. She can be a little young for the mother. And so then I wrote Act Two of Betty's with her in mind.
Now, Betty's Summer Vacation seems to have some things in common with this. I almost feel like you're in the process of writing a trilogy.
Oh, dear, I'll have to figure out what the third one is, unless Miss Witherspoon was.
Are you thinking of a third play?
No, not presently. No. But I do think that Betty's and Why Torture Is Wrong and The People Who Love Them is are similarly absurdist and kind of heightened. They have a similar energy to them. Miss Witherspoon had a occasionally more contemplative feel to it, I think.
Anyway, we have limited time to see Why Torture Is Wrong and The People Who Love Them. It's on. It's only scheduled to run extended to May 3rd, although there's talk about another extension, perhaps?
There's definitely a possibility of it. I don't know when they're going to make the decision. And in this financial period, we're all a little careful about extending, but I hope we can.
And it's at the Newman Theater as mm-hmm. part of the Public Theater at 425 Lafayette Street. That's at Astor Place. And listeners can find out more about getting tickets by going to our show page at WNYC.org. Just one more thing. Oscar Eustace, in the Playbill, he's the artistic director of the Public Theater, praises you by calling you a madman. You like that?
Well, I accept it. I mean, it was in part of longer sentences that had more sane-sounding things
to it.
It
was linking you to a Theodore Adorno thought about the people who make art.
Yes, yes. Well, in that context, yes.
But in the end, it comes down to saying, in effect, that you are a madman. And it's been a great pleasure talking to you, crazy as you are, Christopher
After
Durang.
All these years.
Thank you so much.
Good to meet you. See you again.
Are the words sex and gender interchangeable? Well, Pat O'Connor joins us next for a discussion of that and other language matters. And, of course, we will be taking your calls. This is WNYC and WNYC.org.